This is Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station, part of the Attention Talk Network. Its sister stations include Attention Talk Video, your ADHD talk show station, our subscription-based newsletter, Attention Talk News, your ADHD news source. Each media channel can be accessed at their respective URLs, attentiontalkradio.com, attentiontalkvideo.com, and attentiontalknews.com. Keep up with all the media channels on our Facebook page, found at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Good evening, everybody. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper, and this is Attention Talk Radio. Today is Wednesday, April the 2nd, in the year 2014 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our topic tonight, ADHD tests and test anxiety, and with us in our virtual studio is Ann Dolan, a frequent flyer, one of our go-to people when it comes to educational perspective. I think that you're really going to enjoy our show tonight. Real quickly, the ADHD Coaches Organization Conference is around the corner in Phoenix, Arizona, between May 2nd and the 4th. For more information on that, go to ADHDcoaches.org. The annual CHAD Conference, Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Disorder Conference, is in November in Chicago in Illinois. That's always a big event. We go there every year. I think I've been going since 2008. Looking forward to getting to Chicago this year and checking it out. And I suggest you take a look and check it out and see if you can get there. There's nothing like going to these conferences, learning, getting with your tribe, etc. For more information on the CHADD conference, go to chadd.org. And I think that's all of our announcements. This show was we had to pre-tape this show for a variety of reasons. One is I wanted to get this show out before college finals started, with ample time for some of those out there that are in college that are having some test anxiety, need some study strategies to kind of listen to. And because of my schedule and Ann's schedule, we couldn't do it on a live situation, so we did record it. And I also like to thank our listening audience. This show was actually inspired by one of our loyal listeners who contacted us and suggested we do this. So we're going to roll the tape. I hope you enjoy the show, and thanks again for the suggestion. It ended up I couldn't be more thrilled with the show and Ann. So here we go. We'll roll the tape. Ann Dolan is the president and director of Educational Connections. She holds a BA from Boston College in Child Psychology, Elementary Education, and a master's degree in special education with a concentration in learning disabilities. She's a former public school teacher in Fairfax County, Virginia, and has more than 20 years of teaching and tutoring experience. The goal of Educational Connections is to provide individualized one-on-one instruction based on each student's learning style, employing over 200 tutors and working with over 8,000 students. Ann is also the author of the award-winning book, Homework Made Simple, Tips, Tools, and Solutions for Stress-Free Homework. For more information about Ann and Educational Connections, go to ectutoring.com. And with that, Ann, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
We've had you on several times. When it comes to learning and anything in that realm, we always like you having, because you've got such great ideas and such well articulated. This show is actually born from a listener that had written to us wanting to understand study strategies and test anxiety. And I think I want to kind of start stuff out. Ann, what is test anxiety?
Well, it's a feeling of dread, of worry, and of tension, and often self-deprecating thoughts right before an exam. So for test anxiety, it's a little bit different than generalized anxiety. It's when somebody feels this kind of stress right before a test.
And so it seems to me that can manifest from different ways. Maybe they're not prepared. Maybe it's just the anxiety or kind of whatever. Just kind of interested in your thoughts, because to me, if I'm not prepared, I got some test anxiety. If I have had bad experiences in the past, I might have test anxiety. And then the other time, it's just you have anxiety. Is it coming in other forms or manifest different ways, or is that pretty much sum it up?
That does sum it up, Jeff. You know, kids have test anxiety for different reasons. Sometimes kids have very mild symptoms because they go into a test and they know they're unprepared for the get-go. But other times kids have studied quite well and they're very prepared, but they still experience test anxiety. So it can certainly be in both forms, but we do know it's a serious problem. Between 25 and 40% of kids can experience test anxiety, so it's actually more common than people think. But the problem is that when you're anxious right before a test and you have these symptoms of elevated heart rate, sweaty palms, upset stomach, it decreases your performance on a test by 12% when compared to your non-anxious peers.
Wow, 12%. As somebody who works with people in this situation, what tips and strategies do you have for people who do experience test anxiety?
A couple of things. You know, there was a great study done that looked at kids with test anxiety, and they were taught to jot down all their feelings of worry right before a test. So they went into the classroom, they took out a little notebook, and before the teacher took out the test and passed it out, they just took a couple of minutes and wrote down everything they were worried about. For example, I'm worried that if I don't get an A, I won't get into Clemson University. My parents will be mad at me. I'm worried that all this effort will be for naught. You know, whatever it is that they're stressed out about with regards to that test, they jot it down. And the researchers found that when kids did this, they performed just as well as their non-anxious peers. And so it can be a very powerful strategy in releasing tension and actually help kids perform better.
That's interesting. So just walk in the test, just write down all your worries, almost like just kind of write them down to get them out of your head, almost kind of acknowledging, and then kind of it helps you clear your head, I guess, to kind of sit down and kind of focus and or maybe just take some of the stress off?
It does. What it does is actually releases your working memory. You need your working memory to problem solve, to think critically. And when it's tied up in worries and you're not really using it to its capacity, that's when you really get decreased test performance. I've also encourage kids to go in, and if they're juggling lots of thoughts in their head, you know, they're trying to remember formulas, definitions, that they take their test, they flip it over to the backside, and they perform what I call a brain dump, and they just quickly jot down everything they're trying to remember and get it all down. So this would be different from the worries. This would be like formulas, words, any patterns that they need to remember for the test.
That one I like. I remember doing that myself in college. I'd walk in and be kind of reading something, you know. You have the book out. This is in the old days, when we had books. I'm flipping through that stuff, and literally they put it away, and I put it on my desk or whatever, and the test would come, and I'd flip it over and just start writing everything in my head down. That way I didn't have to worry about remembering it. Then I would sit down and kind of start going through the test, which is kind of interesting, Dan, because I noticed when I did that a lot, I wrote it all down thinking I'd go back and reference it, but I rarely did. I just thought that was kind of – I did it all the time. I did it repeatedly. But once I did it, it was just interesting to me that I didn't really use it that much. Maybe when I was actually writing down, it kind of helped cement it in my mind. But either way, it for me, it actually used to take some of the pressure off. So I particularly like that one.
And that's important, Jeff, that you figured out as a student how to tackle stressful situations. And so often our kids with ADHD, they don't always learn from their past experiences. So that's why having kind of like a coach, an educational coach or an ADHD coach, to help kind of walk them through what worked for you this time, what didn't work for you, what might you do differently, is really powerful so that they do learn what to do better next time.
I really like what you said. All too often people will listen to a tip or trick and say, I need to do it this way, and it doesn't work as well for them. Maybe if they just do something else, it does. So I always like to, you know, pay attention to what, at the end of the day, what works is what works for you as an individual. And there's the test anxiety, but there's actually anxiety because you're not actually prepared, which to me might stem from just A, not being prepared and not really knowing test-taking strategies. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. Jeff, there are three top test-taking strategies, or actually study skills, kids need to approach a test effectively. And so often kids will do things like they'll highlight their notes, which has proven not to be effective. 84% of students study by rereading. So they'll go back and reread their notes. They'll reread their textbook, and that's very visually heavy, and it doesn't help them to remember. So the three most research-based strategies for studying are practice tests. Try to figure out, what do you think your teacher is going to put on that test? And make yourself your own version of a practice test. I often tell kids that, you know, you really have not studied until you can actually hold something in your hands that you've made. So the act of making something is very powerful. Practice test number one, this concept of distributed practice. That means you're going to actually get a better grade on the test if you study a little bit each night than just the night before. So, for example, you have a test on Friday. You could study for an hour on Thursday night, or you could study for 20 minutes Tuesday, 20 minutes Wednesday, 20 minutes Thursday. By doing that practice called distributive practice, you're going to get a better grade on the test. And the reason is not just that you've reviewed the material more, it's that you've slept on it. So sleep helps consolidate memories, and it's a very powerful study skill. And then the last thing is called elaborative rehearsal, and that means that you want to learn things in different ways. So again, instead of reading those notes, you might go onto a website called Cram Session, for example, and watch some videos about it. You might set up a Skype session and discuss it with a friend or do FaceTime. You might look at pictures or draw pictures from your notes. Those types of things help you learn it in a different way.
So this is interesting because I like the so practice test, distributed practice, and elaborate rehearsal. The practice test thing was interesting because you said you think about what the teacher is going to put on the test. It seems to me that in and of itself of trying to think about what they would ask you is probably helpful for a person to become aware, like, what is it they really want me to take from this? And so it really makes a lot of sense. And in my mind, doing it makes some sense, although I think I'd probably be a little overwhelmed at first to kind of do it. But the other one is actually prepare the test yourself as if you're the teacher and going to give it to you. Is that right?
That's right. And oftentimes kids need somebody to show them how to do it. It doesn't come naturally to them. So in our tutoring practice, this is something regularly that our educational coaches do. So we'll teach them, you know, this is what I think about when I make a practice test, model it for them. But really, kids need to go back to their old tests and quizzes, the main points of their notes, and they want to, instead of saying, in what year did the Civil War start, that's just way too factual of a question to put on the practice test. Your teacher is not going to ask that. She may say, what were the three main causes of the Civil War, and for each one, explain why. So those are the types of things you want to put on a practice test. Practice tests are super valuable for math. I've had kids tell me over the years, oh, gosh, you know what, Mrs. Dolan, in math, you either know it or you don't. You can't study. But that's completely not true. So they should be taking practice problems from their book because there are already examples of how to solve it and from their notes. That way, if they get stuck, they can go back and look at the solved problem, and they know how to get through it on their own.
Excellent, excellent. Distributed practice, again, that's studying a little here and a little there, not all at one time, and you touched on sleep being a big part of learning. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. Sleep is really important because, as I mentioned, you kind of consolidate your memories. And even though kids don't realize it, they're actually dreaming about what they've studied during the day. There's also some research that shows that the night before a test, if you just take a few minutes right before you go to bed and review that information one more time, you can increase your grade on the test. So it's not only distributed practice, but it's also the night before the test, review it one more time right before you go to bed.
And forgive me, it seems to me you and I were having a conversation, I can't totally place it, about smell in study. Is there?
Yeah. This is fascinating, Jeff. I mean, when I tell our tutors this and parents are like, what? That's crazy. But there was a really neat study done that looked at the impact of smell on memory and test taking. And the researcher found that when students studied and had a smell in the room, like a diffuser or a candle or an Airwick air freshener or whatever, and then they slept that night with the same smell in their room, they scored better on the test the next day than if they just had the smell on during studying or had no smell at all. So having the smell on during studying and while you're sleeping helps the brain to dream even more about that information. There's an association there.
You got me. So if you have the smell and you have distributed practice, so you're doing it different times, and you have a smell, like maybe a candle, and that sleep, that kind of helps you do it. I'm kind of curious, is it helpful if you had that smell while you were taking the test?
It probably could be, most likely, but it's unlikely you'd actually be able to do that.
Well, I was just kind of thinking if you had something, a candle would be kind of nice, but if you had something else like an air freshener or something you could take that had that there, that would just be interesting. Because I always remember growing up, you take the test the way you studied for it, which is kind of funny. A whole other story on that, but if you're studying on caffeine, you make sure you have the caffeine that the day you took the test, because if not, it kind of throw you off. So it's just interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There's
also, along those same lines, Jeff, there's also some research that shows if you study and take the test in the same place, you do better. So it's kind of like the smell thing in a way. There's an association between learning. So if you ever have the opportunity, and most kids don't, but that their study period is, say that they're studying for math, they stay after school and they study their study guide, they study with their teacher in the same classroom they take the test in, that's even more powerful than studying at home.
It seems to me, because I in college, every once in a while you have those classes where it's the honor system, they give you the test and off you go to wherever you are. It seems to me knowing that and would be good, like, okay, I got this test that I'm going to take in this class kind of across campus. If you went over there somewhere where you would take the test, if you went and studied there, that actually would be a good strategy for those situations in college when you can move around, you're not kind of tied to that one place.
Absolutely.
We need to run to a commercial break real quick. When we come back, I want to just ask you some questions about the elaborative rehearsal. I love that name. But before we go, for those that would like to learn more about Ann and educational connections, go to ectutoring.com, and I encourage you to go there and sign up for their newsletter. It's really great. A lot of the material they deliver is in a video format and different types of things. It's very, very comprehensive. And I have to tell you, I always like, there's a lot of really good topics that I don't necessarily think that you get from some other places. So kudos to you. Again, everybody, go to ectutoring.com, and with that, we'll be right back after these.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
If you think you understand attention so well, then why are you struggling so much with it? Attention is as simple as it is complex to understand. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. It's grossly misunderstood. Consider this. Focus on the wrong thing, get the wrong solution. In our new ebook, we'll share 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download our ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start understanding and managing your attention today. The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an EDGE Foundation coach specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Ann Dolan. We're talking about ADHD tests, test anxiety, and preparing for those tests. Before the break, Ann outlined three key study skills: practice, test taking, distributed practice, and the other one is elaborative rehearsal. And Ann, this is interesting to me because it's just learning using different modalities in different environments. Is that an accurate way of summarizing that?
Most certainly. Definitely different modalities. As I mentioned, Jeff, when we read, and again, 84% of kids study by rereading, we're only using our visual system. However, if we read a paragraph and ask ourselves, well, what does that say, number one, and why does that matter, and we can just jot down a couple notes, all of a sudden it becomes kinesthetic too, because we're doing something. The act of writing is kinesthetic. And if we ever get the chance to discuss it with somebody else, like a tutor or a peer or a teacher, now it's auditory as well. So whenever you can involve those three learning styles, you're going to remember the information at a deeper level than simply reading it or simply memorizing definitions.
Hey, you when you're discussing the material with somebody, that makes a little bit of sense to me. Is there a difference between discussing the material and or trying to teach somebody else the material? Is one more effective than the others or the same?
You know, I'm not sure what the research says on that. I would think that if you're teaching somebody the material, it would even be more beneficial than just discussing it. Because certainly when you're teaching somebody the material, you have to really know it very well yourself to be able to do that. And in order to know it yourself, you're going to have to review it a lot of times and know it at a fairly deep level. So anytime you get the opportunity to teach it to somebody, that's great. Students don't always get that opportunity. So even if they're discussing it with a peer and, you know, again, let's say they're talking about the Civil War, instead of saying, hey, Jimmy, what are the three causes of the Civil War? They might say, hey, Jimmy, what do you think the leading cause of the Civil War is? What information do you have to back that up? What was it that the teacher said that compelled you to feel that is the correct answer? And just getting their perspective on it, too, is very valuable.
Yep. Well, it's interesting because just in coaching some people, I find many adults with ADD are very, very verbal, and I encourage them, you know, not to talk is not to think, and if you're trying to learn something, go have that conversation with somebody because there's a lot going back and forth. And through some, we started kind of playing around with the idea of teaching it to somebody else, and the notion really is if you've got to teach it to somebody else, you do have to organize it and present the material in a certain way. And if you're actually trying to teach somebody who doesn't know it, you get a lot of clues in terms of their body language back when you are really when you really got it together, and maybe when you're kind of struggling a little bit. And if they're looking at you kind of funny, like they're not getting it, because you're picking up on that, you'll change it a little bit. And that process, give and take, my hypothesis is it kind of helps a person organize it and consolidate it in their mind. So, you know, I don't know if there's any science by that, but I just know in working with some people that I have that we've used that as a strategy, and it can be helpful. So
that makes complete sense. And also, when you're studying with somebody else, you have that accountability. And when you have ADHD and you're studying on your own, that can be very isolating and for a lot of people, boring. And they're less likely to focus on it because it might not be of interest to them. But when you have that built-in accountability, hey, we're going to FaceTime at 5 o'clock today, or hey, let's meet at the library at, you know, tomorrow at 6, or let's Skype at 7. All of a sudden now, you almost have your own personal coach.
Mm-hmm. That one is a big deal. There's countless people that I've worked with, and if they need to go do something, if they can do it with somebody in that environment, it makes all the difference in the world for them.
I completely agree.
These are three study strategies, kind of about getting ready for a test. What other tips you got for us?
Well, I can tell you what not to do.
That'd be great.
Because, you know, certainly, again, rereading, not a good idea, but neither is color coding and highlighting. The problem is that many students highlight as they read. And when you're reading, you don't know what's important right then and there. You really need to read the paragraph or that passage or the section, that page, and then say to yourself, all right, what did this say and what's important? What's important here? And then go back. And if you want, you can highlight at that point. But the research shows that the way the majority of students highlight, there is no benefit to it to increase test scores, mostly because many of them highlight while they read. But even if you highlight after you read a section, it's still not as beneficial because you're basically just, you know, tracing over somebody's own words. But when you take the second to write, jot down those notes with your own pen in the margin or on a post-it note if you can't write in your book, you're basically paraphrasing that information or you're summarizing that information. And that's very, very powerful for learning.
You just, something just kind of tripped in my head that was kind of, as you started describing it. A, this is, I mean, this is great information because I didn't really realize, you know, this, as you described it, I've highlighted because that's the way I kind of did it, but I kind of get it. But when you said after you read it, if you go back and you highlight, you say what's important and you go back and you highlight that. What tripped in my mind was my older son is he's a senior. He made his college decision not too long ago. He's off. And before we were getting ready for this, he took the SATs. He did well, but he wanted to do a little bit better. So he got a tutor, and the guy was talking to him about preparing for the SAT, and that was all about the implied message. Whenever you read a passage, you always went back and said, what's the implied message here? Because that's a lot of what they're going to question you on. And so, and when people are reading a passage and they get to the end and they go, well, what's important? You have the literal stuff, which may be the word, the concept, or maybe a heading or title. But when should people listen to the implied message, and should they be taking a note on it? Just can you comment on that?
Sure. People, especially, you know, older students, we don't really inference as much with little kids, you know, in lower elementary mm-hmm. school. But after about fifth grade, inferential thinking is really, really important. And I've worked with many students over the years that are very black and white. You know, they are fine when you ask them what date did this occur on or who are the main characters. They're great with those questions. But if you ask them a question like you mentioned is what is the implied method? What's the tone? Those types of things are really hard for kids. So certainly stopping and saying, what did the author want to get across to me? What's his tone? What's the message? Is really important. But some kids can't even get there, and they really need individualized instruction to learn those skills because they certainly can be taught, but they are much harder to teach than, you know, go back and find, you know, a word that means the same as engaged, something like that. So critical thinking skills is where education is going at this point. We're at a, you know, a major fork in the road in American education. And with the advent of Common Core, gone are the days when our kids could just be able to memorize words and dates and do well on a test. Now we're asking them deeper questions to get at what they really know. And that's what their grades will be based on and their testing data will be based on in the future.
I just loved what you just said. It was kind of interesting. If they're reading it, at, you know, what was the author one trying to tell me? It's kind of cool because that goes back to if you're getting ready for a test and you got to think what questions the teacher is going to ask me. There's an interesting kind of tie there to me, but also to be able to pay attention to what an inference is or an implied message is to me. Many kids have to be taught what to pay attention to. After all, this show is paying attention about attention, and if you're paying attention to the little words and you don't know how to pay attention to the implied message or what's being inferred, it seems to me that is a skill and harder because it's less obvious to see. So it's great comments on that. And I need to go to a commercial break again. Everybody, before we go, learn more about Ann and Educational Connections at ectutoring.com. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
You can't go off to school with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to ADDCA.com and click on Find a Coach.
Focus on the wrong thing? Get the wrong solution. Misunderstand attention, and you'll struggle with it. Get 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download the ebook today at AttentionTalkNetwork.com and start managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're having a great conversation with Ann Dolan. I'm learning a ton myself. And before the break, we started talking about what not to do, and you highlighted color coding and highlighting. Any other tips on what not to do?
Well, certainly cramming, which is very popular, especially amongst our ADHD kids. You know, oftentimes they want to study. They have great intentions, but when it comes down to it, they can't make themselves get started. And so they see studying as all or nothing. There's a lot of new research on procrastination, and it's just so rooted in emotion. Because if you think about it, you know, you're not in the mood to study, and you have two choices. You can post some pictures to Instagram and check your account, or you can study for math. You know, what feels best? Obviously, picking the Instagram feels best. Feels better than studying for math, right? And so often our kids don't even think. They'll just immediately go for that instant gratification. But what research is showing us now is that when you're at that fork in the road and you just simply recognize it, you just simply know, oh, my gosh, okay, I have really two choices here. But what I'm doing at this point is I'm trying to make myself feel better. I'm trying to fix my mood and go with the Instagram. But oftentimes when kids were taught to stop, think about their choices, and then make the bar super low to entry, they were able to get some work done. So that means instead of saying Instagram or study for a math test, it might be Instagram or review one question for math. So it's not study, which is ambiguous and large and overwhelming, but it's just write down one question. I have kids that say, you know what, sometimes when I'm not in the mood to do a writing project and I know I have to do it, I'll just say something to myself like, I'm just going to make the cover sheet, because then at least you're doing something. And often when kids just get over that little hump, they can keep going. So that Nike slogan, just do it, I say to kids, you know what, ignore that slogan, just get started, really. You don't have to do the whole thing, you just need to do something. And what research also tells us is once we feel good about ourselves, because when you do something, you feel more successful and you're happier, that often becomes a trigger. It's almost like positive energy that you want to have again, and you're more likely to approach the task, that fork in the road, in a positive way next time.
I love that. Lower the bar.
Well, great. Yeah,
one
lower the bar.
And get, because I'm just trying to close my eyes and imagine, you know, a study. You know, you don't know what you don't know. It's overwhelming, da-da-da-da. Sure, Instagram's a lot better. Oh, all I have to do is write down one question. Oh, I can do that. And then one leads to two, and all of a sudden you get a little bit of momentum kind of going, and you start to feel good. So I love that.
Yeah, and Jeff, it can be by time or task. It doesn't have to be by the task, which is do one math problem or make a cover sheet or write one source for the bibliography. But it can also be by time. And, you know, I love the time timer, as you know.
Yep.
It's a little physical clock with a red disc that kids can actually see move, so it gives them a greater sense of time. I often tell kids, use the tolerable 10. You know, anybody can tolerate anything for 10 minutes or 5 minutes of fury. Set the time timer for 5 minutes. Or set the timer. There's an app on the iPhone for time timer. You can just set the timer on your own phone without an app. And just work as hard as you can, only for 5 minutes or only for 10 minutes. And then you can daydream after that if you want. But
mm-hmm.
just doing something by time or by task is going to make you feel better.
I know personally, I would do tasks first. Just that's how I work. But I like you can do either one, time or task, because I definitely think the time would work better for some other people. And again, Ann, thanks for plugging Time Timer. They've been a very loyal sponsor of ours for a long time. And everybody, Time Timers, it's a visual clock. It's a disc, and you don't see the second hand go, but it's like a pie shaped thing that decreases as you get towards the end of something. So it's a real visual type thing and very easy to read and see. Man, I love that one. That's a real good one. Any other things that you would suggest not to do?
Oh gosh, one thing that I see kids do a lot is that here's the thing. Honestly, Jeff, some kids do not use their assignment notebook, and this is their good old fashioned planner that they're supposed to write their homework down in. And for those kids, they often do better with an electronic type of assignment notebook, and the two I can recommend that have block scheduling for high school students are My Homework is one of them, and then the other one is called iStudies Pro, and that's iStudies Pro. iStudies Pro is just for iPhone, but the My Homework can be for Android too. But regardless, kids need to factor in their studying time. And so, for example, if they have a test on Friday, oftentimes they'll write down in their agenda book or their assignment notebook on Wednesday and Thursday, they'll write down study on Wednesday, study on Thursday. And research tells us that when a task written down is really ambiguous, then you're far less likely to do it. So I often coach kids to say, you know what, I'm not going to write down study anymore. I'm going to write down finish study guide or make 8 flashcards for Spanish vocab words. So you want to actually write down the task that you want to do. And also, those tasks in your assignment notebook should not be more than 30 minutes long. If you have ADHD, anything more than 30 minutes by itself, even if it's a specific task, is going to feel overwhelming. So try to break it down a little bit further. Again, make the barrier as low to entry as possible.
Awesome. With the time we've got left, test-taking tips. So you studied, you walked into class, you got rid of the anxiety. Now you're actually taking the test. Any tips for actually answering the questions?
Sure. You know, especially on multiple choice tests, I find that a lot of kids do not mark up their test booklet. And there was an interesting study done that looked at kids taking the SAT and found that the ones that marked up their test booklet the most scored better. So there's a lot of value in doing something called slash the trash. And I often encourage kids that when they're taking a standardized test or even a multiple choice test and they know, for example, A and C are wrong, they really need to remove it from their visual periphery and just cross it out altogether. You know, slash the trash. Get rid of what's not important.
Oh, wow. I did that one right. I literally used to go through, when I used to take a test, I used to sit down and I would go through it. I'd get rid of all that stuff. If there was one that I thought I knew the answer, I would answer all that stuff. I didn't race through the tests, but I tried to get all the easy ones kind of at least done. And then what I would do is I would end up, like, you know, reducing it down to A and C or A and B, and I would probably spend a lot of my time just thinking through those. And then at the end of the test, I would actually go back through the ones that I thought were easy and cover the answers and see if I took them, if I got the same answer, maybe I misread something or kind of whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's a great strategy, Jeff. That's awesome.
Wow, I actually did that right. Because I had all these wacky things that I had done in the past, and I always wondered, does this make any sense? I mean, I kind of evolved to that, to the way I did it, and maybe it's just me, but if that makes some sense to you, then everybody.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And also,
bank.
I like the idea that you skip the hard questions. I recommend that kids should, you know, they come across something hard, wait on it. Skip it. You can go back to it later. Because sometimes you'll answer a bunch of other questions and it will trigger your memory or you'll be able to make a connection to that question that you didn't yet answer. So when you're in a conundrum and you're not sure, definitely skip it and then go back.
Mm. That's for multiple guest questions. How about math or essays?
Well, essays are a little bit different. I really like the idea of the brain dump for essays because often we have a lot of information stored in our head and we don't want to start writing an essay in paragraph form. at the outset, we want to just jot down a bunch of notes, bullet points, phrases. Then from that, we want to construct our essay. The problem is that many people with ADHD are impulsive and they'll just start writing and they won't have a framework for what they want to write. So just taking a couple of few minutes at the beginning and creating kind of like a graphic organizer or just a framework is very valuable.
That makes a lot of sense to me, particularly in the context of what you said with those with ADHD. They'll just jump right in and they'll have this stream of consciousness that's all over the place, and then they're kind of working backwards. Whereas if you put that stuff down, it makes it easier for you to organize it and deliver it. I really like that.
Yeah.
How about for math problems or math tests?
Math is tricky. You know, the biggest problem I see with ADHD individuals in math is that they're not cognizant of the details, like the positive and negative signs, checking their work, that type of thing. And when you say to a student, especially younger kids, oh, honey, why don't you go back and check your work? That's completely overwhelming to them, and it never works. So you can say, you know what, just go back and check every third problem. For if you're in the midst of taking a math test, it's always a good idea to go back, and if you don't have time to check the whole thing, but just to pick a couple of problems and just check those. Oftentimes, again, people are impulsive. They want to get done, turn it in. But it's really vital just to take those last few minutes to go back over your test. And when you do check a problem, people with ADHD can't look through the problem and check it, just spot check it. They actually do better when they do the whole problem over again. So I would recommend that to in situations where you have a couple of answers. You're like, I don't know. This could go either way. I'm not sure if this is right. Don't just look through it again, do the whole thing over.
Interesting. That really makes a lot of sense. When it comes to math, the people I've in this space I've kind of worked with is sometimes it's like I know the material, but I always get, you know, they get dinged for these little things. And sometimes it's just a simple multiplication or, again, some little thing that actually gets them. Is that common from your experience?
It's completely common, and, you know, it's tough because some math teachers are sticklers for correct answers, and even if you've gotten three-quarters of the problem right, you showed all your work, your steps are correct, but you get the final answer that's wrong, they'll count it wrong, whereas other teachers will say, you know what, you got all the work right, but you just added these two numbers incorrectly at the end. I'm going to give you partial credit. If you have a diagnosis of ADHD and you have an IEP or a 504, or if you're a college student, you definitely want to go to your math teacher and ask about the partial credit issue, because that's really important. There's nothing more, frustrating than knowing how to do it, doing the majority of it right, and still getting the whole thing wrong.
Absolutely, absolutely. We only got just a minute or so left here. Any final thoughts or tips that is worth sharing?
I would say that sleep, again, is super important for students, and especially kids with ADHD, because they tend to rely on their electronic devices a lot, like all kids do at night. And really, you know, if you can get yourself to have some downtime at night before you go to bed, a half hour, an hour, without that electronic device, you're going to be more likely to go to bed at a decent hour. Sometimes we see kids that are stressed out over school, that are not performing well, and then you talk to them about their sleep habits, and they're getting, you know, 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night. An adolescent needs 9.25 hours of sleep a night. So sleep, again, can be very powerful in consolidating memories, but it can also certainly make us in a better mood. So if you have a student or you are that person that's not getting enough sleep, recognize that having more shut-eye is actually going to improve your academic performance.
I like what you said. On one side, it helps lay down that learning, so it's there. The other side, too, is if you're sleep-deprived, it's hard to pay attention when you're sleep-deprived. And if you have ADD on top of that, it just, to me, it like leverages it and makes it that much worse. So I think that's a very good tip. Ann, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Jeff.
Everybody, learn more about Ann and Educational Connections at ectutoring.com. Hope you enjoyed the show. Catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.